thought I recognized you. I gave you a plate of corn muffins back in 1947 to paint my chicken coop, and you never did it.
Those corn muffins were lousy.
Paint my chicken coop.
Make me.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 37, on the subject of The Simpsons, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Chris Page.
Yes. Hello. Hi. It's Hi. Us. We're here. It's me. It's Matt. And Chris Page is with us.
Hi.
Chris.
Hey, Chris.
We are here to talk about something that we have not allowed ourselves to talk of before, and that is, of course, The Simpsons.
So we're going to put the verboten quote in there.
Yes, of course we are, because so many people love it so much. Mm-hmm. Make sure that goes in there. No, we realized that maybe not everyone likes hearing us talk about Star Trek, and maybe we should talk about something that people actually care about. And,
which is Star Trek appearing on The Simpsons.
Right. So
Nimoy was on there a lot.
Yeah, Nimoy made some appearances. God, I know. Oh, Patrick Stewart, of course, in the...
one of the finest episodes ever.
Yeah, in the Stonecutters.
Yep.
I'm sure there were probably others.
X-Files episode.
Oh, yep. Oh, yeah.
The monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail, yep.
Monorail.
Right. So, yes, The Simpsons. As we were discussing in the pre-show, we, all three of us, were on board with the show quite early on, either at the beginning or soon after. Chris, you were saying you watched it on the Tracy Ullman show also?
Yes, yes.
Because I remember sitting through that show and thinking it kind of tedious and just waiting.
I remember being 10 and not getting any of the jokes, but there was a cartoon show on, and so it was entertaining.
Right, exactly. But you remember the way they set it up is you would have, 10 minutes of sketch and then 30 seconds of Simpsons and then 10 minutes of sketch. And...
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Tracy Ullman to go through.
It was, and I probably would appreciate it now, but if Chris was 10, then I was 15, and it was kind of that Woody Allen, like, very dry, like, psychiatrist humor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, yes. I didn't really get it, but I didn't care because there was that cartoon show. And,
let's all go out for frosty chocolate cheeks.
Okay, Dad.
Nice.
But really, I mean, you look at those now and they're of course badly animated. There's not a lot of great jokes, but.
And they look weird.
They do. But at the time, I mean, really, there was nothing like it. There was absolutely nothing like that on television. It's hard to imagine. 20 years later, that there was not some adult, oriented, satirical cartoon on the air, but there wasn't.
No, closest you got was the horror that is the Flintstones.
And even that wasn't satirical.
Well, no.
They had Fish Police.
No, Fish Police was one of those many, many, like,
yeah,
Simpsons.
That came,
was it?
What, like, Simpsons season 3 or 4 around then?
Was it that late?
Well, they threatened to put it out earlier. I remember that one specifically as being one of those.
The threat of Fish Police.
No, I remember because, The Simpsons came out and it was a big hit. And after the first year or two, like all your entertainment weeklies and that would have lists of, okay, well, animation's hot now, so here's all these new shows coming out. And I remember Fish Police was always on the list and it would never air. Like, okay, what's Fish Police? They just never showed up. And did it even ever come out?
I'm sure it did at least one or two episodes, possibly following Family Dog.
I believe actually it was before Cop Rock.
Cop Rock. We need to do a whole theme show on Cop Rock. That'll satisfy all the singing fans anyway.
Now,
that
was
take a total of 15 minutes.
That the cop show that was also a musical?
Yes, sir, it was.
Yes, it was.
That's
a very
glorious.
Badly done musical.
But I think it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek and people just didn't get that.
Like, why are they singing?
I think people didn't realize that the show didn't take itself seriously. But maybe I'm wrong. I didn't actually watch it.
Maybe it did take itself seriously.
Could be.
I seem to think that it was a little it wasn't so much, it wasn't two camps where you could say, obviously they're joking, but it wasn't like serious enough to go, this is clearly meant to be serious. And so it was that weird in between place that they just couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't justify it one way or another with it.
I guess I could see that, but it was in that same era where a lot of weird TV started happening. And that's around the time Twin Peaks came around, and a lot of TV was doing some weird stuff. But really, for The Simpsons, for an animated, like I say, adult-oriented show to come out was, I mean, The Flintstones have been off the air for 20 years at that point.
Yeah, thank God.
And it's a living, and I'm obligated to say that.
As was the Flintstones itself.
But it was really, I mean, you know, you would, like I said, I mean, like Chris and I said, you know, you would, as a kid, sit through this boring grown-up show to see glimpses of this. I went, we talked about this briefly in the pre-show, I went to every shitty comedy movie that there was between 1985 and 1992, just because that's all there was to do in my hometown. And I actually, no shit, went to see Weekend at Bernie's 2. I'm not proud of this.
Not Weekend at Bernie's 1.
Oh, I saw that too. But
when they still had the plot.
Right. But no, Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Genre-destroying Weekend at Bernie's 2.
But prior to Weekend at Bernie's 2 was a cartoon short of the old-school variety like you'd have with a Bugs Bunny short back in the 40s. 5 minutes of The Simpsons. And at the end, they said, you know, this Christmas we're coming to Fox, blah, blah, blah. I was like, wow, awesome. I remember nothing about Weekend at Bernie's, but I will always remember, you know, seeing The Simpsons, like, cartoon short for 5 minutes.
This was a young Fox, too, eh? Like,
oh, yeah. Fox was just starting. I think, wasn't that one of their launch shows? Or close to it?
Yeah.
It was, like, The Simpsons, Married with Children, and, like, a not much else. Maybe Cops.
You're talking about the enduring shows. I mean, I remember 21 Jump Street, and I remember
21 Jump Street.
Beans Baxter.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
The aforementioned Tracy Ullman show.
Right, right. Yeah, obviously Tracy Ullman would have come first. So Simpsons wasn't there at the beginning, but it was pretty close. But what's interesting to me is basically Fox, I don't believe, would be where it is now, like as a somewhat legitimate network without The Simpsons.
Like, oh, yeah.
It really ended up being its cornerstone, like one of its huge hits, and obviously that's why it's still where it is, but it's just strange to imagine this weird little, you know, hand-drawn, like, bug-eyed, you know, show turning into, like, the cornerstone of a media empire.
Yeah.
And to get the requisite shot in at Fox right now, if it was on nowadays, it wouldn't last 2 seasons. There you go, Adrian.
Yeah.
Nice. I didn't even say it this time. Thank you for that. Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, that was kind of my argument against the way they treated Matt Groening with Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
Was, you know, this dude helped you build your network. Like, him and a handful of other guys really helped you get where you are, and this is how you treat him?
Yeah, well, you know, fuck him.
Although, I will say, Fox does take the number of shots at their network with a surprising amount of, you know, good nature.
Oh, sure.
The thing is, they have to. They can't not have The Simpsons on.
Well, and I heard, and hopefully I can find some place to back this up, but I think I heard it in the commentary, that Matt Groening has an agreement with the network that they will not interfere with their content. Like, apart from standards and practices, you know, like censorship issues.
Yeah.
They will not.
That's awesome.
They will not give him notes. Like, he does not get network notes and say, can you change this? Can you take out the hits at Fox? Can you do this? He won't allow them to do that.
I wonder how far in he finagled that one. Because, man.
I think from the beginning, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? I guess. Damn.
I think part of his deal was, and maybe that's because Fox was so young at that point and they were just willing to sign it away. But
whatever you say, man.
If I'm not mistaken, he also controls the merchandising.
Real? Wow.
Wow.
Like, and I could be wrong about all this, and I'm sure Ushwin's going to jump up and down and say, no, you got this wrong. But or maybe somebody else out there who's a junior fact checker, but probably Ushwin.
The junior fact checker brigade.
But I'm pretty sure, listening to the commentaries on those, that Matt Groening has an unprecedented level of control and has for many years.
Except for that one episode.
Except for, yeah, when they made him bring the critic in, where he was not happy about that. And that was a good episode, so mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell his problem was. But you go through, like, the early years of that show, and again, with it being the only show like it on, and again, it's hard to imagine that because that's the show that led to all these millions of, you know, I mean, it led to South Park, and it led to Family Guy, and it led to, like, all, you know, a bunch of unsuccessful shows, too.
Well, I mean, it basically, you know, made animated primetime shows.
Right. But those first couple of seasons when it was the only game in town, you look back and it's like, this isn't very good. You look at, like, Bart gets an F, and you look at the, God, I don't know what else. I can't even remember now.
God, what was the first? Bart the Brain?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of the problem was, too, is the early seasons, there was a, they tried to fit a moral in there, it seemed like. Especially the first, like, three seasons, about up to the very end of the third season, they really tried
they
to fit
really
some kind
of
a moral on the end.
Yeah, they were doing that standard sitcom thing, you're right.
No.
Although, they did have some great little callbacks, like, where they had the teacher, like, Miss Krabappel telling Bart not to put his hand out the window because he'd lose his arm, and then Herman at the shop saying, when your teacher tells you not to put your arm out the window, you listen to her.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I remember that. I remember picking up on, because really you hadn't seen, again, and I hate to keep harping on that, but that was such a big deal in, like, 1990, 91, seeing a show that did stuff like that. And you're like, oh, that's what he said before.
Yeah.
Or you'd see movie references, which are now, like, kind of, you know, passe, and you're tired of just seeing cartoon characters reenact a movie. But back then, I was like, hey, that's from, you know.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah. And it was this neat, cool little, the best thing I can compare it to is, like, Airplane. With the density of jokes, with the just rapid fire nonstop. Here's a slapstick gag. Here's an intellectual gag. Here's a reference. Here's it, just one right after the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it really brought that to mainstream, you know, culture. And really, once it hit its stride, it turned into this fucking unbelievable thing. I mean, and when would you guys? You're saying what? The end of season three is when they got their shit together. Do you think? Or?
I pinpointed it down to the exact episode earlier today while doing like my research for this. Actually.
Okay.
I figured out exactly what
that's
I said.
Someone did research.
Yeah, really.
The three men in a comic book episode, where it's Martin and Milhouse and Bart get the comic book, the Radioactive Man comic book.
Okay.
At that point, that's the very end of the third season.
Really?
It's either the second or third season, and it's at the very, very end. It's like one of the last episodes, and that's about the point where the animation hit, and the storytelling hit, and the jokes hit, and it all just kind of hit, and then from that point on, it just kind of, it took off. That's kind of where it started for me, at least.
Really? I got my little episode guide in front of me now. I'm trying not to run this like I did the Star Trek shows, where I'm just reading from the guide. We don't need to hear about the lemur again, but... But yeah, I can see that. For me, it was a little bit later than that, I have to say, but I wasn't watching every week either. For me, the first one that really grabbed me and I really said, oh my God, this is like nothing I've ever seen before, was the Cape Fear episode.
Yes.
And you guys mentioned this as personal favorites.
Cape Fear is my favorite episode.
It's a tie for me with that one and Hank Scorpio. Cape Fear is definitely up there.
Mm. See, that's interesting because Hank Scorpio is my favorite, so you're kind of like standing on the fence between me and Matt here.
Yeah.
But that was the first time. And was that like season three? That was early, maybe season four, but it was still early-ish. But that was the first time I was like, they had the perfect combination of different kinds of jokes and different references. And there's that moment where they've got Homer in the witness protection program and that whole gag with, now when I say hello, Mr. Thompson, and step down on your foot, you smile and nod. And I had to... Like, I had taped it, and I had to rewind it and watch it again because I was laughing so hard.
I think he's talking to you.
And when they really hit that Homer was the focus of the show, and they really hit that Homer was incredibly stupid and gluttonous and all, that's when the show really hit for me.
That was a big one because, I mean, like, you know, Bart as a character just isn't as interesting, you know?
That's...
I mean, there was definitely some great episodes focusing on him, even in the early season, but he's just, like... not as interesting a character.
Yeah, I agree. Although I do have to admit, especially recently going back through some old episodes, I really, and I didn't originally, but I really kind of have a fondness for Bart being a little Hellraiser, like just doing boy things. And I that's kind of dumb, but it's something that the show, when they did it right, they did it really right. And there's a bit in the movie where, and you know, spoilers for the two-year-old Simpsons movie, go fucking see it, for Christ's sake.
What the hell?
Where
you're listening to this podcast if you haven't seen
it. Yeah, really. Where Homer's, it's near the end where Homer's got the bomb and he's trying to win Bart back, you know, from Flanders. And he says, come on, boy. And Bart's like, no, I need a good dad. I need a stable dad. And he's like, I'll let you hold the bomb. And Bart runs to Homer. He says, the man knows what I like. And it's just that streak of Bart, that destructive, like, you know, he's a little bastard with nothing redeeming about him, and that's it. Like, I like when they do that right.
I always felt Matt Groening had a real grasp on sort of what kids are actually like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in The Simpsons, even in Life in Hell, like, he really got, you know, the sort of asshole side of kids and sort of what they get up to.
Sure.
Like, how they amuse themselves. I always, felt really true to me.
Yeah, and even early on, I would say, like, even in the Christmas episode, the very first one they did.
Oh, yeah.
There were a few things that Bart did that were just, you'd never seen a kid do on TV before. And, like, that's, well, I mean, that's like me.
He set up his teacher with Woodrow Wilson. Blind date.
Right.
In, like, the first season.
Yeah, that's...
Who among us can say we haven't done that?
Well, that's such a classic boyhood prank. You're right there.
I mean, you're not talking about being a bastard. That's like, you know, that's... Although Homer's response to that is still just, you know, the, you know, welcome to Dumpsville, population U.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I am gay.
Yes, I am gay.
Yeah, that was a particularly good one.
She really loved him. She wouldn't care that a crocodile bit his face off.
But even, like I say, even that first Christmas episode, there's a few things that Bart just, like, even just, Al, quit it. I mean, at the time, I could not stop quoting it. Or the first time he said, "I caramba," just, you know.
Yeah.
And it turned into a cliche
like
and a catchphrase.
Much like everyone else in North America.
Well, yeah. But, I took Spanish for a few years, and I didn't think anyone even knew what that was, apart from, you know, actual Spanish people. Mm. And just, it seemed like one of those random things, and now it's a cliche, and it's been run into the ground. But at the time, it was like, "I caramba, ha! Don't have a cow, I get it."
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Did either of you ever do the Bartman?
No.
Good.
I did own that CD, however.
Yeah, that was not a good CD.
That was a good CD, sir.
Oh.
I take it with that.
All right.
I remember nothing about it, actually. So.
Sing the blues.
It should be noted, however, that I also listened to Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer at the same time, so it's quite possible my musical taste was quite shitty at the time.
Well, we didn't really know. We didn't know what music was back then. I'll say that too.
It was a dark time.
It was. The early 90s were a very strange time. Yeah. That's a subject for another time, because there's a lot to be said on that topic. But, yeah, I was with you there with MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice. But, yeah,
Simpsons episodes, going back through old lists.
Uh-huh.
And I know this one may fall off of your radar, Alex. Your hatred of sports, but Homer at the bat always.
Oh, fuck.
That was a good one.
That was a great one.
I will say that my hatred of sports does not affect, like, Simpsons always handle that stuff great. So,
that was a really early great one for
me. Yeah, it was.
It really was. I mean, just fucking brilliant with Ken Griffey Jr. getting gigantism.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one. I'm trying to think. Was that the one where Homer was the, Dancing Homer, or was that another one?
No, that was a different one.
Okay.
That was just the one where he was Dancing Homer.
Oh, okay. Because that was also baseball, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. A lot of baseball.
There was also there was a Hunger Strike episode, and apparently it inspired the minor league baseball team in Albuquerque to call their team the Isotopes.
Oh, awesome.
Really? So
there's actually a baseball team, because I know, because they occasionally come to Tacoma, and I'll open the paper, and it'll be like Albuquerque Isotopes at Tacoma, whatever. Like,
awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool, and really seeing the influence that the show's had over the years is fantastic. Chris, did you ever make it downtown, like a couple of blocks from the Needle, when the movie was out? They remade a 7-Eleven into a Quickie Mart.
Oh no, I missed that one.
I got a couple of pictures there because it was fantastic, and I'll put it in the show notes for anyone who hasn't seen that. Probably everyone saw pictures at least, but it was great. I mean, they just remade the outside so it looked just like the Quickie Mart. Inside, they sold Duff beer, and they changed Slurpees to Squishies, and a couple other things. It was very cool.
We never got any Duff flavors, beer though.
I don't think they changed the flavors
because, you know, blue is an important squishy flavor.
Yes,
purple's a fruit. No, and they didn't sell Skittle Brow either, unfortunately.
Alas. No, we never got Duff beer. We did get Buzz Cola.
They had Buzz Cola, but they also had Duff beer.
Like, our 7-Elevens can't sell beer, right?
So. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And we had the pink Simpsons donuts.
Yeah, they had those as well. I wasn't going to mention that, but, you know. Moving on.
Right, of course, I'm sorry.
Of course. That's our verboten.
This will all be bleeped out.
Right. But no, those, I mean, like I say, around Cape Fear or around, like, where Chris says, we're not too far apart there. somewhere between season 3 and 4 they took off. I mean, Matt, do you disagree, or would you say that was around?
That was definitely around where they picked up. I remember the big one that sort of defines when it became sort of big for me,
mm-hmm.
Was the one where Bart skips school and goes to and ends up at the Quimby birthday thing. He sees Mayor Quimby's nephew.
Right.
not beat up the butler.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember this is probably a little while after the Cape Fear one, but I remember going to school the next day and every kid in that entire school was standing around going, "Chowda, it's Chowda, say it right.
I'm not true to me yet. Get back here."
I'm not a clumsy, clutzy waiter.
Whoa. Yeah, that was definitely an early favorite, and you speak to a good point. Unfortunately, I got out of high school before the show really caught on, and so I mean there was some of that new, you know, wearing the T-shirts and the knockoff shirts and all that stuff, and a couple of people would say, "Don't have a cow," or "I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you?" But it really didn't turn into that. Like, there really wasn't going to school and everyone quoted it. Like, I missed that. That's very strange to me.
It was just so weird just walking in and everyone being like, literally everyone in the school being on the same page.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, as sort of a cultural thing where, you know, it kind of brought people together, I never really experienced that. Was it one of those, like, it wasn't just a cool kid thing, it was an everybody thing?
No, everyone watched that show. Everyone. And if you couldn't, like, you would go to your friend's house or you would beg your friends to tell you what happened.
See, that's cool. I never really encountered that. And Chris, you're kind of in between our ages, so was it that way for you, or was it?
No, it really was. It was more the nerd kids watched it that I remember. Like, I mean, I didn't, you know, talk to like the cool kids, so I don't know if they watched it or not. But I mean, among all my friends, I mean, that was what you did on, you know, Sunday night or Thursday night.
Thursday night at the beginning against Cosby.
there's your polar opposites.
Yeah. Well, no, there's your like cultural shift right there.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Because I remember thinking, you know, everybody thought like, oh, well, there goes that new cartoon show. There's no chance that, you know, they're going to beat Cosby. And then, holy fuck.
Well, then, even when they did.
Jazz musician.
Yeah, I think Cosby even said that was like the end of like America. He was like, that's the downfall of America. And they're not buying pudding pops. I cannot do a Cosby impression, so I'm not even going to try it.
That's okay.
I don't know what the jails is all about.
that's also not a very good
one. I'm aware of that.
I can't do one either, though, so that's okay. My Cosby is by way of Eddie Murphy in Raw.
With the flarn and the filth?
Yeah, the flarn filth. I would like to talk to you! Yeah. But yeah, I love that they take their shots at, like, they did a bunch of Cosby, like Matt was just quoting, you know, like, take that. Like, yeah, we got you, you're down, but we're gonna kick you anyway. And, former President Bush, the first Bush, you know, said a few things about the, like, well, America needs to be more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons. And then, you know, he got his comeuppance years later. Of course, Matt Groening, everything Matt Groening does is a soapbox for him to kick Richard Nixon. There's been plenty of that over the years as well. So.
I dream of a world where Matt Groening can just fight Richard Nixon.
But, I mean, I love that this old, you know, I'm sure he was like a protester in college, this old hippie, old 60s hippie that just couldn't stand Nixon, is still to this day building a media empire on, you know, offending.
Nixon is long dead.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Piss on his grave, salt the earth.
I'm going to make him the villain of my second TV show.
And even in like the you know, that one Halloween episode in The Simpsons. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh.
The Jury of the Damned.
I did a favor for you once.
I think that was another early good one, now that I think of it, is the Halloween episode, the first Halloween episode they did.
Two or three were good. Yeah, the first couple were good. And then it kind of got into, I think the last really good one was with Shining.
I've actually enjoyed them. I pretty much, even when the show entered its kind of bad period, I still enjoyed the Halloween ones. But
I think they really hit their peak kind of around the Shining. And
I would say that's about right. But even, like I was saying, even the first one,
it was always something you watched every year, though. You know,
yeah,
even if you weren't watching the show anymore, you made time to watch the Halloween episode because it was what you did.
But when they got that, when they got James Earl Jones to read The Raven.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I remember in my English class that year, we were doing Poe, and I managed to finagle a report to work that in as a visual aid. And basically, all I did was show that and read a couple of paragraphs, and I got a standing ovation. So.
See, my teacher brought that episode in.
Ah.
Very cool. Nice. I actually have that on my MP3 player.
Ooh. Very nice. I
Raven.
The strange thing to me, and maybe not strange, but you look at when we're saying that the show got good, and you look at when you say it kind of went into decline, and it lines up almost perfectly with Phil Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
When he first appeared, when he first started being Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure, until he died. Like, that was the golden age of the show.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because of him, if it's a coincidence, if it's a little of both, but really that's the best way to say this is where the, you know, this is where the great stuff is.
How much was he doing writing on the show?
No.
No. Hmm. He was just, I think for me, a lot of it's due to the writing more than anything else. The writing really seemed to become like very self-aware and very kind of, look at us, we're clever, as opposed to being clever. A lot of like, look at the cool guest stars that we have. Like, it was like the Simpsons.
Yeah, that turned into that got to be a thing after a while. I
or
prefer
that whole how far can we get from where we started to where we end up? That always really bugged me in the later.
Oh, around season 10 or so, they started doing this thing where they would have one plot for 5 minutes and then diverge off into some other complete other thing, and that got to be a really annoying formula after a while.
Yeah, like, at first it was kind of cool, and I liked it. Beginning when it was kind of random and funny, like I don't know, Brian's episodes early on even had some of that a little bit in them, but then it was like as it got on, it just became like such a tripe. And
well, whenever you can see the formula, then it's no good.
Like, oh god, okay, another one of these. Okay,
right. But I mean, really, in that sort of, you know, like I said, the golden period, and we're talking seasons 3 or 4-ish to like season 9 or so. There were,
I'd say 10.
Yeah, I 10. 10 was about half and half for me. There were a couple of real stinkers in there and a couple of really good ones. And
I'd say 10 is where decline began. So probably 9 would be the golden age.
Right. But again, like, I kind of lining it up with the Phil Hartman thing. Really, when they started fleshing out Springfield is what it was for me. When they had this incredible, like, tapestry of, like, you know, 100 different background characters, that really added to it for me. And and you get into those episodes like 22 short films about Springfield, which is one of my favorites.
Fuck yes.
I love that.
Yeah. And really.
Find something amusing about my appearance when I'm riding my automobile.
Yeah.
It's the largest auto that I could afford.
Everybody needs an automobile, even the very tall.
What I love is, should I therefore be made the subject of fun? I guess so.
What?
Yeah.
What I also love is that it's the same guy from the New York episode.
Yeah, yeah.
He was on the bus.
Yeah.
The long legs.
I can't feel my legs. I guess he couldn't take his auto to New York. That one was good, too, and I was disappointed. I mean, obviously, after 9/11, they couldn't show that one. But a couple of gags about the World Trade Center towers. And all right, I guess I see that. People are sad. But that was one of my favorites. I mean, I was very disappointed. I would probably put that in my top 10.
Yeah. Or being chased by a pimp is just hysterical.
That was so to the tune of The Entertainer.
See, that's not even way up there on the laughs for me. For me, it was Mountain Dew or crab juice.
Oh yeah,
Crocolash. Ooh, I'll have a bowl of that. No bowl, stick. That and Bart visiting Mad Magazine.
Yeah,
I love that bit.
Let me Kaputnik and Fern burn.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that one, but and that was one of those The Simpsons are going to blank before it got kind of irritating.
Before they would announce it, like in the episode, like was there like you know, Homer's like, I don't want to go to New York. I went there once, and then there were chuds.
Everything's bad if all your members
the
pimps,
and the chuds. I think maybe the last good road trip episode they did was like the Japan one, because that one was quite good, but that one was pretty late. Like that one was maybe season 10, but.
Guts come out.
Oh, fishbowl.
Oh no, that was a different one.
Is that a different one?
Yeah,
that was a different one. You're right.
Fishbowl was a subplot.
That was Mr. Sparkle. That's right.
Yeah,
Mr. Sparkle. Oh no, Wazoo!
I love like quoting the most obscure Simpsons, you know, line, like not the ones everyone knows, but like you know, And I love, you know, yeah. There's your answer, Fishbulb. Because everyone's like, what is that? What's that from? I know that. There's your answer, Fishbulb. So great. It's creepy seeing, whenever you see them, and you don't get to see this often, when you see the guys recording the voices. When you see Bart's voice coming out of, like, Nancy Cartwright, and you're like, that doesn't match at all. I mean...
Yeah, except for Julie Kavner.
No, Julie Kavner matched. And what's her name? Yeardley.
Yeardley Smith.
Right. Smith? Yeah, I think
so. It's kind of weird to see her voice come out of that little tiny body anyways, just because she's just weird looking.
Well, yeah, but she only has the one voice. So, I mean, once you get used to that, you're covered.
Not true. She's Lisa, and she's a native Lisa.
Oh, right. I'll call you Lisa Jr. That was a fairly, like, that was probably season 10 as well, wasn't it?
Somewhere I think there, so, but, yeah.
And that one was quite good. Of course, Jeebus comes from that episode. That one's endured.
Save me, Jesus. Oh, fuck that one up.
Yeah, boy, man.
I'm gonna go hide over here.
I know I've never prayed to you before, but help me, Superman.
But really, let's out of that golden era, what would you guys say? Like, your top five, just for the hell of it. And if you miss some, like that, you know, I'm not. It's not like a do or die list. Like, just off the top of your head, what are the greats?
Well, Cape Fear and Scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The monorail.
Oh yeah,
monorail.
One
yes.
of the definitive fucking Simpsons episodes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I'll say Stampy the elephant is one that I always.
Yeah. Love.
Really.
Just for the end when like he's butting down elephants and Marge's like, "Why is he doing that?" And the guy's like, "Some people are just jerks, Mrs. Simpson."
Stop that, Mrs. Simpson.
That just amuses me to no end. Yeah. I don't know why that episode in particular and the whole when they go to the tar pit and he hits the deer and the doe, a deer, a female.
Oh, right. Yeah, that should have been kind of a hacky, contrived thing, but they really pulled that one off.
That one got my mom on. My mom watching The Simpsons.
Really?
Yeah, she didn't watch it much, but she really liked that.
Huh.
What else?
Legs out with my face.
I would say, like, quite a lot of the Halloween ones for me. There's one particular Halloween episode that I have no idea how this has endured, but it's really one of the greats. And it was such a time-sensitive one. It was the 1996 election with Clinton and Dole.
Yeah. But they voted for Coda.
Yeah, if you go back and watch that episode, it's like a 10-minute segment out of the whole show. Every line, literally every line, is a joke. There is no exposition. There is no filler. There's no setup. I don't know how they do it, but just from a comedic standpoint, every single thing that comes out of someone's mouth is funny.
Yep.
And it's
thanks for getting rid of Dole for me.
The hell is this? Some kind of tube? I just and I don't know how like I say, a time sensitive episode about the 1996 election has turned into like one of the classics, but it really had like everyone go ahead, throw your vote away. I am Kang, and this is my sister, Kodos. Hello. Yeah. That one's way up there for me.
Oh, God. The Shinning one was a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite good.
And I'm not just saying that as a big fan of The Shining.
No. Just put the fog lights in.
Growing out of Treehouse of Horror, I do like the Attack of the Pityfoot Eyesores. That always makes me
happy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was quite good.
Just for Paul Anka's little song there. I don't know. I still see, like, an eyesore, and I'll just sing it as I drive by, you know.
We do have quite a few eyesores in this town, I gotta say.
Yes.
Just don't look. I gotta say, though, way up there, like, just under Hank Scorpio for me, is the Space Coyote.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, where Homer goes to the chili tasting and eats the Guatemalan insanity peppers.
Yeah.
That one was fucking phenomenal.
Oh,
for me.
The one with Hugh, with Lisa's fiance in the future.
Oh, yeah.
That was good. They went to that well a few times after that, and it got a little old. But
it never worked again.
But that first time, you're right. That was definitely
as much that it was like hysterical or funny. I mean, it had its funny bits, but it was also just like it was a really sweet, like just kind of like...
Yeah.
And when they tried, they did sweet really well. Mm-hmm. I was telling you guys, and I'm not ashamed to say this publicly, the hockey episode, where Bart and Lisa are pitted against each other, and at the end they have this just heart-wrenching, like, they both remember, you know, that they love each other and all this, and like helping each other to the cookies and all this stuff, and, you know, Lisa drops her ice cream cone, and I don't know, it sounds really hackneyed the way I'm describing it, but it's really sweet, and I seriously, no kidding, tear up every time I see it. It just breaks my fucking heart. And they, a couple of times that show,
skating around the,
field
does what it does best.
And I don't know how they can do that. I don't know how they can be such dicks and still make you really care, you know.
Well, I mean, you care a lot about the characters.
Some of them.
Well, of the main family?
Yes and no.
Is there anyone in there you don't like?
Lisa.
Really?
I like Lisa.
I like Lisa, too.
There are some episodes of hers that I like, but there are a lot of, like, especially when you start getting into the less good seasons, like, oh, it's a Lisa episode. She's going to be whining about the environment or...
I think the Lisa and Homer episodes were the best
ones. Oh, those are sweet. I agree.
Yeah, those are all
good. Yeah.
The one where she goes to the museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing good ends in E-M. Yeah, that was...
Spice song. Oh. Well, that one's good, too.
No, those were good, but I don't know, and I can't even think of a good example now, but there were a few that just kind of irritated me. And even...
Like when she became a Buddhist.
Or when she became a vegetarian.
Actually, the vegetarian one I didn't mind.
The Buddhist one was a little bit... I'll give you the Buddhist one as being...
And I actually don't remember the Buddhist one, so... I don't know. Maybe I just...
McCartney on Apu's roof.
Yeah, that was great. I do...
Would you like to hear a song? I'm Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Man.
I just realized we stole that joke. We stole a variation of that joke.
When did we do that?
In the previous episode here, the last Clusterflunk, when somebody asked to hear the Tarantino impression.
Oh shit! Yeah.
And you did it. That's basically a variation of that joke. Okay, you want to hear it? Here you go, Matt.
The one where Bart sells his soul is going to.
Oh God, yes. You dial 9-1, and when I say dial 1 again, and that was another. Actually, that was another sweet one.
Yeah,
that was another one. Like by the end, and Nancy Cartwright's really good at those sort of Bart's at the end of his wits, and he's crying, and he's like, and you actually feel it for a minute there. She actually sounds like a little boy who's like lost all hope. And it's just like, oh, God, that's horrible.
Very interested in purchasing little boy's soul.
Makes you wonder who else's soul Lisa's bought.
I really like the dream sequence in that episode. That was genius.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, I hate to use the word genius too much, but really, it was. I just, the whole pairs of people, and he's only got the one, and he can't row, and... So good. So, like, sort of dream-like, but also really symbolic, and just... That was that show at its best, definitely.
Way to breathe, no breath.
And also that. I'm a big fan of the Laddie episode.
Oh, yeah. That one I shouldn't like, but I really do.
Why not?
I don't know. It just feels like one of those ones just like, the Simpsons got a magic dog.
Is that a standard cliche, really? The magic dog? That's in your book of comedy cliches, magic dog?
People are always overusing the magic dog thing, and I'm sick of it.
I mean, I understand what you mean. A lot of times they do episodes where you're just like, ugh, this, I can see the formula coming a mile away.
For all those times the Simpsons got a horse?
the two times, you mean?
Yes.
Actually, I believe...
I don't care what this guy thinks.
Actually, I believe it was Flonk who said that's when the show lost him, was that episode.
That was not a good episode.
With the jockeys and the secret.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was a weird fucking episode.
Yeah, I didn't care for it either, but I still think there were some good ones after that. So, and the thing is, we talk about the show going south, and it did around season 10-ish, but there were still good ones in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just there were fewer good ones than we were used to. We were really spoiled for, I mean... I can't think of any other show that had such a long run of great episode after great
episode. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Times 24 episodes per season. That's, you know, hundreds.
I mean, like, that might even be the thing. I mean, just the show has gone from being excellent to just being good.
I think that's part of it.
We're so spoiled by it that it's like, oh yeah, well the show's not worth watching anymore. Well, it is. It's just become a good show rather than the best show.
I think that's part of it because I think they used up a lot of their original concepts and they had to go back to the well, or they had to do that weird, you know, like we were saying, start with one plot and.
I think there is a bit of that, but I think it did. There was a stretch of about 2 or 3 years in the early 2000s when it really did become very hackneyed and very like kind of stale.
Yeah.
Like I really think there is a point it's like seasons like 13 and 14 where it really just kind of got like it was just the guest star of the week and the Simpsons go to wherever and it was like the same 3 or 4 kind of plots and they really didn't do, you know.
Can you name any sort of episodes specifically? Just because I'm not good with the like, you know, breaking it up by season.
Let me see.
Is anything that sort of springs to mind?
I can pull up episodes right quick here and be like, this is where it hit.
This is where it all went wrong.
The lemur is where it all went wrong.
I mean, like, what was it? Episode, like, season 14, you had Lisa and the Spelling Bee.
I don't remember
George
that one.
Clinton as a guest. I mean, it's like a lot of these are just really just, it was just kind of like bland, weird episodes that just didn't really have anything to do with it. I mean,
right.
So I can find, like, examples that you've seen. Because, yeah, a lot of them are.
And that's the problem is I kind of stopped paying attention. Like after a year or two of it not being any good, I kind of stopped watching.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us did.
Although I did catch, they did a parody of The Departed a few years back that was actually really funny.
Really?
It was actually surprisingly funny. It was a good parody. By itself was not a good, okay, episode. Well, you have the episode where Mo goes to bartending school and turns his bar into a trendy nightclub.
I would say pretty much without fear of contradiction after that run of, you know, season 9 or 10 or whatever, any episode focusing on Mo, not interested.
Yeah.
They keep putting Mo in these circumstances that I just do not fucking care about.
With the exception of the poetry one that has one of my favorite Simpsons.
Oh, that had a great scene, but the episode itself was still stupid.
Yeah, it was a terrible episode, but I love that scene so much.
Like, the Flaming Moe's episode was great. I love that episode.
No, that's why I made that condition that, okay, early on they did okay.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But Moe's got about 5 good stories in him.
Yeah, but, like, they followed that episode with the Trinity Nightclub with, like, Homer being a fortune cookie writer for a Chinatown restaurant. And you go, it's Homer got a new job episode, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next episode is a Marge episode, and you go, oh, shit.
What job does she have now?
Oh, wait, no, they go to a hypnotist. Never mind. Homer goes to a hypnotist. And has a horrific
childhood. Oh, right. Ugh, yeah.
Yeah. And it just, and the next one is Lisa Converses Buddhism. I mean, it's like a run of like 4 or 5 episodes where you go, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I think part of what happened was, and they've had writers come and go and come and go over the years, obviously. And you mentioned before Conan O'Brien was on there and he kind of had a definite touch. And when he left, the show changed a bit. The one writer that maybe some people know, I don't know if you guys know by name, John Swartzwelder. He wrote something like 60 episodes, and pretty much everyone that we named as a favorite was either written or touched by him. Yeah. This guy was fucking phenomenal. And I think he left the show around season 10 or 11, and that's a part of why. I also think David X. Cohen was working there for a while, the guy who went off and did Futurama.
Yes.
Yeah, he was.
And he left in, I guess, 98 or 99 when they started making Futurama, and that's around the time we're talking about. I think they lost some of their heavy hitters was part of the problem.
Yeah.
Swartzwelder went on to do some novels. I've read a couple of those and they are amazing. They are like just as densely packed as his stuff on The Simpsons where just like every sentence is a joke.
Mm. And we will put the names of those in the show notes.
Yes, absolutely. They're a little hard to come by, but they're really worth it. But that guy alone was responsible for, you know, like I say, most of the greats. And when he left, I think that was part of it. And David X. Cohen and, you know, even going back to Conan O'Brien. But I think what happened was they maybe didn't get, you know, as high a caliber of writer as they'd had. And that might have been part of it as well. And then you get into like, well, what else can we do? I don't know. Homer gets a job at a peanut.
Lamp.
Right. So then it kind of flailed.
I will say,
go ahead.
The highlight of my college career was one summer when I came home and I worked at a box factory. There was a box factory.
Did they put candy in those boxes?
They did not. They put boxes in those boxes. Boxes to hold other boxes.
Were you tempted to put a red cap on one of them?
Oh, I was so tempted. You have no idea.
My boy's a box.
That was.
Let me ask you this.
Does
your office have a yellow line leading into it around the desk and out again? Oh, and it'll lead you safely out again.
I think that was one of my all-time favorite Bart as a Hellraiser moments as well, where he put all the megaphones together. Testing.
Oh, yeah. That was the military school one.
I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's,
which was also good.
Yes, it was.
They did a couple of those. Lisa is a girl and she can do it too, and that was okay for a while. I think that's part of my Lisa irritation is they went to that well too many times.
Yeah,
but,
They did a later one with Homer versus like where he was Mr. Burns' prank monkey.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which was not good, but had some of the best lines, I think, that I've seen in one of their shows, where it's just like, he has to throw pudding at Lenny, and, you know, he hits him, and Lenny's like, my eye, I'm not supposed to get pudding in it.
I love the setup that's like, here, throw this at that. At Lenny, he's a war hero.
Not Lenny. Yeah, that was another thing. Schwartzwelder, the writer that I was talking about, his big thing, the thing he was best at was old timey, like 1900, like 1890 to 1900 speak. So like anytime Mr. Burns would talk about the autogyro from Prussia, that was Schwartzwelder. Like he's great at that weird shit. And who doesn't enjoy some good old timey speak? Of course.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. The Citizen Kane episode.
Oh yeah. That was an early good one. But, I mean, so it flailed for a few years, like, in this decade. I would say, and you guys aren't, I don't know if you even really watch the show much anymore, but the movie came out a couple of years ago, and that was, I fucking loved it. I just watched it again today, as a matter of fact, and there's still moments in that just make me smile, and I can't help, you know, despite myself, like, I'm just watching, and just big old grin, just so many, and they're fan service moments, and I can see them coming from a mile away, but they're so, just, they knew exactly what I wanted, you know? Well, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't want to bring back Hank Scorpio, but they did the next best thing, and, you know. But no, there's like...
He took over the entire Eastern Seaboard. He should have really been, you know, involved in that somehow.
You would think, yeah. But on the other hand, I kind of respect that they didn't just bring him back.
Yeah.
But, no, there's that moment where they jump the Springfield Canyon or whatever it is, and they see the ambulance there. From like season one, when it, you know, that great slapstick gag that they had, and it's just right there, it's just like, aw. And of course, seeing Bart's penis.
Yes.
I remember I hadn't seen the movie yet, and Matt comes home and he IMs me, and he says, "Well, this summer has really been a summer for me seeing penises I never wanted to see. I saw Spider-Man's penis, and now I've seen
Harry Potter's penis, and I saw Bart Simpson's penis."
Yeah. This has really been the summer of penises for me.
That was a big year for me. Summer of penises.
I really enjoyed that, though, that whole gag, that whole bit where they do that, you know, stupid Austin Powers thing where they keep covering it up and then there it is.
Yeah.
I enjoyed, they did a lot of playing around with stuff they couldn't do on TV and a lot of stuff maybe people didn't even realize, like seeing Otto with a bong for the first time instead of just hinting at it.
Smells like Otto's jacket.
I mean, obviously, everybody knew what was going on, but it was nice just once to see visually. Okay, yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Otto, I'm playing Pablo.
Or like, just little things like, you know, you can't say goddamn on TV. You know, stuff like that. I enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed the animation. And that's, to me, that's, the show's kind of turned around the last couple of years because they've started doing it in HD. And there's a lot more focus on sort of deep background jokes. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more detail in there. And there's a lot more subtle, you know, stuff going on. And I'm really enjoying that. And I think the writing's improved a bit as well. But I think that definitely adds to it. I think what happened was there's this whole generation of writers that kind of grew up with the show that are writing for it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they want to see it done well. So, you know.
One, it's been influencing their comedy as well at this point. So, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're growing up and that's your comedy base, you're probably going to put out some pretty stuff.
Yeah. But, and also even people like our age, like, you know, people like in their 20s and 30s who see what the show kind of turned into, and you're like, wait a minute, I could write something better than that. I'm going to go save The Simpsons.
Just kick the door open. I'm here to save The Simpsons.
Yeah, get in the line. But yeah,
there was that one whole episode where Bart and Lisa wrote like the itchy and scratchy thing.
That was good.
Please sign this document saying you didn't save Itchy and Scratchy. Actually, that was a different one. That was Poochie, which I would also put on my list.
Oh, Poochie.
I have to go now. My home planet needs me.
I quote from that one all the time.
The best part is that
sign Poochie off of AIM on using that.
Yeah, I often do.
The best part of that is, like, if you read, like, comics in the 80s, like, in the old Squadron Supreme series, like, Tom Thumb got, like, a Poochie death. Where it was like off panel, was like Tom Thumb died of cancer 6 months later.
He had to go back to his home planet now. I again quote kind of obscurely from that episode where when I'm watching a movie and I'm really bored and they're not focusing on the part that I want, I say, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? That was actually, I think, something we discussed when you were on last, Chris, was Lost. When they opened season 3 and they wouldn't get back to the fireworks factory.
Just, yeah, yeah.
Come on! But yeah. No, I would say the last couple, like I said, after the movie, 2007, I checked it back in with the show. I'm like, okay, this was a great movie. Let's see what they're up to. And there's still some crap. There's still some ones that aren't great. But there have been some episodes that have really impressed me and are almost as good as the show in its prime.
Well, I will say the shows that always impress me are the Sideshow Bob ones.
Those were always great. Actually, no.
I wanted to talk about Sideshow Bob. I think that he actually is in some of the best episodes of Barnon across like all 15 seasons.
I think there's one that I didn't like, but that leaves like 8 that I liked, so.
Like, I mean, honestly, just. Brother?
No, I loved it. I love the one.
That was, I fucking love that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one where he becomes mayor.
Yeah. That was great. Yep. That was great.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right. All that stuff I did.
No truth handler, you.
I deride your truth handling ability. And yeah, and then when he wants to blow up TV,
yeah,
that one was good.
Wright Brothers plane.
Right.
He hits the building and it drops.
We'll have to pursue on foot. No, those were all good. But there's one. There's one they did during their bad years where I'm like, okay, well, Sideshow Bob episode, this has still got to be good. And I didn't really care for it. And I don't.
Is that the one in Italy, or is that?
It might have been the one in Italy.
Grimes one.
Which?
The one with Frank Grimes' kid.
Frank Grimes' kid?
Yeah, the one with Frank Grimes' kid.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It was.
Frank Grimes was one of the best, like, done in one kind of, you know, great. And that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's Matt Groening's favorite episode.
Most of the writers and most of the people said it's their favorite episode, like Sam Simon.
Yeah, because I mean, if you after you've built this world, you bring in one, you know, outsider to kind of look in and say how ridiculous it all is, you know.
That was really my space adventure.
If you had to work with Ford, you'd go insane. Yeah,
right. I'll just go home to my mansion and eat my lobster. That was great, and that showed that they didn't need fancy guest stars. Like, that was just, like, what, Hank Azaria doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, they didn't need a gimmick, really. They didn't need a, you know.
Living in an apartment between two bowling alleys.
Yeah.
He was crushed in a silo accident.
That's one of those we talked about in the pre-show. For some reason, our local affiliates growing up decided not to show us certain episodes, and we all apparently have a few episodes that we just missed. Frank Grimes episode was almost never on in reruns for me. It took me a long time to see that one. It took me a long time to see the Marge is Afraid of Flying one.
Wow, yeah. Really?
I didn't see that for years. And recently, I was going back through my box sets, and I had never seen the Bart Dates Reverend Lovejoy's Daughter one. And really, being a huge fan of the show and finding a gem like that that you'd never seen, I almost didn't want to watch it.
Finding the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, it was like, it was like, I know this is going to be great, and as soon as I watch it, I won't have any more. Like, maybe I should just not. You know, it was really one of those things, but I ended up watching it and loving it. But
then your face melted off. And
No, I didn't look directly at it.
Small price to pay.
Are you calling me a Nazi, Chris?
I am calling you a Nazi.
Okay, good. That's fine.
That episode, actually, the one with the Reverend Lovejoy's daughter, has the best bit with the guy in the car driving by yelling at him for stealing from the collection plate.
I don't remember that.
He's like, "You stole from the church collection plate, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, that's like a little sentence that he yells out in like a little like 2 second span. It's one of the funniest things like I've seen on that show.
I don't remember that. But then that's one that I haven't seen 100 times. I've still only seen it the one time. So
watch it again.
In fact, that's the one where I Hate the Sea and Everything in It comes from.
Yes.
And I didn't even realize Matt was quoting anything for a long time.
Boy, Matt sure does like to say that a lot. I guess he made it up.
Oh, I figured it was just from one of those stupid things you like that I hate.
That's fair.
Actually, no, one of the later like season bits I loved too was when they had Lucy Lawless on the Halloween episode.
That was a good one.
And only because of the very end.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great ending.
Xena doesn't fly.
I told you, I'm not Xena. I'm Lucy Lawless. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was a good all-around good one. Like, that was a great ending, but I enjoyed that anyway. I liked whenever they went after Comic Book Guy.
Yep.
Because, you know, obviously they were going after the super, like, you know, uptight nerds who, like, obsessed over continuity. And
flat-out attacking their fans, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. Could have done without him sleeping with Mrs. Skinner. That was a little much.
Yeah, I could have passed on that one.
But I
could watch him argue with Stan Lee all day.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, the one they did a few years ago with Alan Moore made an appearance.
Yes, that was great,
yes,
too.
Watchmen babies and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, what's cool about the show that, you know, I mean, yeah, it's been around 20 years, and yeah, it's hard to find new plots or whatever, but that it does give them the ability to every now and then get really obscure and really appeal to fans of a very specific thing. Like, no other show could do an Alan Moore joke, you know.
Yeah, that was well before the Watchmen movie had come out.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was fantastic.
Plus, you know, we all know Alan Moore loves Little Lulu now, so, you know, that's...
Well, that's an important thing that we needed to know. But going back to the...
I loved, oh God, what the hell, Close. The guy who did Ghost World.
Yeah.
Just right.
Lisa how much he wants to write Batman. This is. You see my drawings of Batman? This is his utility belt, and here's where he keeps his change when the Batman has to ride the bus.
Yeah, that was good. But going back to the Sideshow Bob thing, I didn't want to sell that short. Those were definitely some of the very best episodes, and that's one of those where, yeah, the first time I was like, ooh, Kelsey Grammer, but then after that, it's like, eventually, that became, to me, something that Kelsey Grammer was more famous for than any of his other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's Sideshow Bob. Oh, he also did Frasier and Cheers. Mm-hmm. But, hey, yeah. Sideshow Bob.
Oh, and they had that episode.
Oh, that's, actually, that was the episode that I didn't like, where he lived in a storage shed in, like, one of those storage facility places.
Oh, what do you call it? You want to sleep in here? It's $30. Thank you, good, kind innkeeper.
but the end of that was like, Springfield has a 3 strikes and you're out rule. You're going to be executed. And they kind of made it sound like there were never going to be any Sideshow Bob episodes again. I'm like, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And then they did another one anyway, so... Yeah, that one I didn't care
excuse
for.
Excuse me.
But I do like, one thing I was mentioning to you guys is apparently they're sort of toying with keeping certain things, like, going continuity-wise, like Apu's children are apparently aging.
Yeah, you were talking about that. That's really weird to me.
Like, the Simpsons kids obviously haven't aged a day, but Apu's kids are now toddlers. They're now walking around. Maude Flanders is still dead. Mm-hmm. I only recently learned why they did that.
What's her?
It was a contract dispute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they killed her. Mm-hmm. That's fucking hardcore. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't need you. We'll just kill off your character. Fuck you. That was nice.
The show won't work without Maude Flanders. Oh, wait.
Maude, eh? But I'm trying to think. There's a few other things that they did. I know they made Barney dry out for a little while, and then they decided no.
That was so depressing.
Yeah, it was.
When he fell off the wagon, because, I mean, that episode was all based around how, yeah, it's kind of sad that he's a complete drunk. You know?
Yeah, we play it for laughs, but hey. Yeah.
You know, it's maybe not that funny because it's sad.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
You know, they kept him sober for like 2 years, and then he fell off, and you're just like, oh.
Oh.
That's
depressing.
The apparently, who did they out? I remember during the years I wasn't watching it, they decided that one character was gay and they outed them.
Oh, Patty.
Oh. Which one is she? I can never tell them apart.
The one that didn't have sex with Troy McClure.
Oh.
But who did almost have sex with Principal Skinner.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
I still don't really know which one is which, but
a baby from China, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that in a recent episode where they're having some kind of toddler or, like, infant focus group or something. I don't remember. Mm. Anyway.
Also, I believe Smithers is supposed to be gay.
I love that they never came out and said that.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite runners on that show for years. Especially when they did, like, the Troy McClure Q&A thing.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal with Waylon Smithers? You know what I mean. The deal with Waylon Smithers is he's 40 years old and he's Mr. Burns' assistant. Thanks for writing.
Mr. Burns, out of this!
I really enjoy it. Like, I loved, especially when it started out kind of subtle. I mean, they eventually realized it wasn't.
Yeah.
But for a long time there, they did a really good job walking that line, I thought.
Hello, Smithers. You're quite good at turning me on. Probably should.
I had that dream again where they fly in the window. Yeah, we're just going to be quoting the show now for the next.
Smithers, there's a rocket in my pocket.
I think my favorite, like the greatest Smithers moment, like great moments in toadying, was the one where Homer's trying to join the golf club, and. And he's one of Matt Groening's hits at Richard Nixon. And Smithers says something like, I've never seen you lose a game, sir, except for that one in 74 where you let Richard Nixon win. That was very kind of you, sir. And then Burns goes, say, I wonder if this Homer Nixon is any relation. And Smithers, this is so awesome. He says, unlikely, sir. They spell and pronounce their name differently.
I just love the fault of that. I just felt so bad for
him. Oh, yeah, he does this.
I can't go to prison, Monty. They'll eat me alive.
But I love the spell and pronounce the name differently. Like, basically, you got every part of that wrong, but somehow I'm making it sound like it's okay because, you know.
That, what do you call it? The Who Shot Mr. Burns one?
Yeah.
Was another one. That was huge when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember that, yeah.
Did you actually care?
Shit, yeah.
Really?
Got to school, everyone fucking talking about it.
Really?
Ridiculous theories. I heard tons of them.
I just knew
was that the dog did it.
I just knew that whatever it was, they were going to fuck with you. So I wasn't trying to take any of it seriously.
Mm-hmm. No. Huge thing. Yeah. Everyone was talking about that.
Huh. And then they revealed it was the baby.
And then you find out it was the baby. Also, I found out that I really want to see Speedway Squad.
In color.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite visual gags when Smithers is, my mouth tastes like an ashtray, and he coughs up like 10 cigarette butts. They did a really good job of walking the line between just totally absurd cartooniness and like pseudo-realistic. Like, people's eyes wouldn't bulge out or anything like that, but every now and then they throw in something just totally ridiculous.
He was a rank amateur next to Dr. Colossus. All right, Colossus, you're free to go, but stay away from Death Mountain. You know, but all my stuff is there.
Well, at this point, I think we're just going to be quoting episodes, so maybe we should wrap this up. Anything else, gentlemen?
Well, now I really want to go watch The Simpsons.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching some old episodes now.
Yeah, me too. That's certainly not a bad thing. I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's more to say, but I'm not really sure. Like, again, we're just going to be quoting for the next thing.
Yeah.
I think we covered all our bases. I want to talk about Futurama.
I'd like to do a whole separate show about that, actually.
I think if we're comparing the two, I would say that The Simpsons had a better run of comedy, but Futurama had better quality.
Yeah.
I would say Futurama was more consistent, too. It kind of hit the ground running. Like, early on, it was still pretty good, and The Simpsons kind of took a little while to get there. But then again, Futurama was built on the back of The Simpsons, and it already had that trial and error.
Yeah.
Like, they already knew what worked, you know, and it was a lot of those same guys, so.
Yeah, I'm sad to say I'm far more familiar with Futurama now than I am with The Simpsons. It used to be back in the day, like my friends and I had the Trivia Pursuit for The Simpsons.
Right.
And we were the only ones that could play the game with each other because nobody else like even competed. Like,
yeah.
With the questions. Like it was a joke to let anyone else play with us because they just couldn't keep up.
Right. Yeah. I would say honestly that The Simpsons, like, we always say, yeah, this is my favorite show. This is the best show, whatever. People just kind of take The Simpsons as given now.
It's it's your favorite show. You like things that are good.
And yeah, I mean, my favorite shows are like Arrested Development and like Deep Space Nine. But really, even those shows are not as good as The Simpsons in its prime. Yeah. I mean, overall, you know, it's been up and down and up and down, really taking that chunk. I can't think of any other TV show ever.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this like in the first episode. It changed the way we talk.
Yeah. I mean,
Doe is in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
It is.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Like 7 or 8 years ago, they added it. There's another word that got added in, too. Cromulent got added in.
Did it really?
Yeah. Collegiate edition.
Oh, God.
That's awesome.
That is the greatest thing I have ever heard. Oh.
That shows how far the show goes. That I mean, you know, they're teaching classes on it at Columbia University in New York, and like most colleges now actually have like a Simpsons course of some variety, it seems.
Quidjibo is also in.
Quidjibo, yeah, so in Quidjibo.
I'm still just the many layers of Cromulent being in the dictionary is blowing me. Because oh god,
I don't think Embiggen made it in though. If you're gonna have Cromulent, you have to have Embiggen.
Well, you got to. They go together. Oh, man. That's fucking fantastic. All right.
I actually failed on my paper because I used Cromulent.
Well, like, you know, not everyone's... Well, it's in the OED. What do they say it means? Like,
I can't remember what it was, but it was reading somewhere that, like, I was reading, doing my little, like, my boning up for today, and I was like, oh, that's, you know... Cromulent made it into one of the dictionaries. Like it wasn't the Oxford, it wasn't the OED, but it was something else. It was like some other major dictionary, like the Collegiate Edition something.
Right, right.
Dictionary. But it was like, really? Like, Cromulent? That's fantastic. And
God. I honestly, like, I usually try to, you know, rein in my laughter, because that's Matt's, you know, gig here. Yeah. But I could not help that.
You're stealing my bit.
Yeah, but I could not help just that shriek of laughter just now. That's too much. All right. Well, let me ask you guys this. As far as celebrity appearances on the show go, who do you think? Like, who's your number one pick? Ruling out the regulars like Kelsey Grammer, like really the one time. Well,
do you want like celebrities as themselves or celebrities as other?
Doesn't matter. Just overall, because it's something where literally just about every celebrity that's ever been, has been on the show. So I don't know. I'm just looking for any angles we haven't touched yet. So.
I liked Danny DeVito as Homer's brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like in recent years they've tried to kind of ignore that those ever happened and they never had a brother and all that. But
they were good episodes.
I didn't really care for them, but I also think that they didn't have the advantage of being written, you know, during that good period. So, like, if they brought him back during season 5 or something, it might have been great.
I love John Lovitz and his various characters, not just as Jay Sherman, but as, like, all the other guys he's played.
Which those sound exactly like John Lovitz.
Yeah, exactly. There was this great one one of the later seasons where they bring back Artie Ziff.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It was pretty good.
And they walk into Moe's, and all the characters John Lovitz has ever voiced is there. They all turn around and go, hello!
Nice.
Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's definitely way up there for me. Although I'm going to actually pull two people, and that would be Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny.
Ooh, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a great episode.
Because that X-Files episode hit right. I don't know. Usually that show did not handle timeliness well. Like, usually they do their Titanic parody 2 years late and their, you know, Star Wars parody 3 years later, whatever. Yep. But because the X-Files was a running thing and it was getting bigger and bigger, by the time that episode aired, it was at its peak. Like, everyone loved it, and it was on after The Simpsons.
Yep.
And that, it's also stood up as one of their best episodes just in general, writing-wise. But those guys...
All the bits in there, I mean, like, David Duchovny has a picture of himself in his underwear.
Yeah, a little beefcake picture.
I love that.
That was the first, I think David X. Cohen was probably involved with that one, because there was a lot of nerd stuff. There was a lot of inside, like, Futurama-type jokes in that one.
And just the whole, you know, I don't bring you peace and I don't bring you love.
I bring you pestilence. Right.
But brings us love. Break its knees.
Is that the love of a man for a woman? Or? Yeah. No, but when you think about it, those guys were in that episode for like 5 minutes. Like, that was not one of those star vehicle, hey, look who we got things. They just wrote the story around it. And hey, by the way, Scully and Mulder.
I hardly think the FBI is concerned with matters like that.
It's hypnotic, like a lava lamp.
Well, there's that one. There's James Earl Jones also had some good bits on there.
He did. Yeah. He did. I like there's the one where they do the Lord of the Flies thing.
Yes.
And it ends with that.
Mo.
Yeah, Mo. And he wasn't in the whole episode. He was there for like a second.
And so the children learned to get together. Yeah. Eventually, they were rescued by Mo.
That was that's one of the ones that was on all the time where I was, so I got sick of that one.
It wasn't a good episode anyway.
It was all right. There's some good lines in it. Go banana! All right, I think that about covers it. Unless you guys.
Favorite, just not like main character, but favorite side character.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There's a good one.
I know mine, but.
I don't know. It kept changing over the years. Like every few years, it would be somebody different. Like it was Professor Frink for a long time there.
Yeah.
And, fuck, I don't know. That's probably who I'll go with, Professor Frink.
Professor Frink, okay. Frink. Make you laugh, make you think.
I gotta go with either Ralph or Cletus the Slapjaw Yoga. Just for the song of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Mine's Mr. Burns. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Burns is up there.
And again, when you got Schwartzwelder writing him and with that really great old timey speak.
Yeah. Atoms. Six of them.
You know, the interesting thing is actually about The Simpsons is also that it coined the term of the use meh. It
really?
Meh. Like,
yeah, it really did. Like,
huh.
It was some episode in like during the heyday of the show when like Bart's trying to get Lisa and Bart to like go outside, I think, and Lisa was like meh. And,
yeah,
like,
I remember Bart, that one.
M-E-H, meh. And like from there, that's kind of where it I don't remember it before that, and that's kind of where it took off from, I think.
Huh.
We're the MTV generation. We have neither highs nor lows. What's that like?
No, I remember the one you're talking about where she's trying to get them to go outside, and they won't. And she's like, get out there and do yard work. And 5 minutes later, she comes in, and they're back in the living room. And they're like, well, we tried, but it was hard. What? Hard work made us quit. I use that one quite a lot.
It's so true.
God.
It works on so many levels.
I think if we're going to discuss The Simpsons, then we do have to talk about the dental plan because there's...
Yes.
You can't really discuss The Simpsons and not bring that up.
Well, and honestly, Chris, you can't discuss dental plan without Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Oh, God.
And it all ties back to Mr. Burns.
How many times... How many times have you gotten that stuck in your head, honestly, just in it? It's like a song, only worse.
Well, it happens to me at least once a week, actually.
When someone says the word dental or plan?
Yeah.
Or I'll just be at work and for some reason I'll be doing something else and I'm just going to be like, something that even fits like that kind of rhythm.
Yeah, and you get that cadence going. And
the great thing is you can set people off with that, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey, dental plan. Yoink.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, yoink is another one. Is that in the dictionary? Yep. That's one that I've definitely picked up from that show. Mm-hmm. You grab. I always loved they would do that gag every time where someone would grab something and you would hear the sound of their footsteps running off into the distance, hear a car door slam, and hear tires squealing. Slam.
Yeah. Let me just get something from my car.
Exactly.
Or I'm like, Leonard Nimoy. Keep watching the skis.
If I had a girlfriend, she'd kill me.
Dr. Taco, sir. Hang on, I'll get it out.
Oh! Mr. Wembley, it's happening again. For some reason, whenever they show the nuclear power plant and you hear that hawk, it drives me nuts. Like that establishing shot of the power plant, and you hear this bird squawk. I'm like, what is every time? Like, what is that? And it's probably got a name, and it's probably like this whole fan thing. But I just don't know why they do that.
Also, I really do think we have to talk about Fat Homer and his.
Oh, I was just. Oh yeah,
I can't believe all three of us left that off of our lists.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely
nothing else for the number of fat jokes we can make at your expense, Al. That usually involves something involving a large bag of popcorn,
or you know, a muumuu,
or a muumuu, or a button.
Well,
I also use the Catarl thing. All of that was like
Catarl pig up. Ooh, I'll order a tab. I think that was the first one that really made computer jokes, like when computers were just starting to become more prominent, and there were a lot of like back when I was on AOL, there were a lot of little sound files from that episode. Like, go.
I trusted you.
Never should have left the bird in charge.
I don't want to look like some sort of freak. Just give me the muumuu.
Quite enjoy that one.
And I love because my dad's a little big doesn't mean he's crazy or anything. He drives by.
No, I'm just giving a sandwich ice cream. Yeah. I like
get the grease test, rub it on the wall.
I like, there's another thing that's kind of entered my shorthand is whenever you've kind of forgotten about something that you often forget about, towel rack. Like, Amanda and I will be driving to the to where she gets her bus, and I always forget that I can go in the HOV lane because there's more than one person in the car.
Yeah.
And she'll go, Al, towel rack. And it's just one of those, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, my.
That was a great one though. I wash myself with a rag on a stick.
I use that one too all the time.
Yeah, me too.
Sisters, and it grosses them out to this day.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm amused by that. But yeah, there's that one. And God, just the whole thing with we'll give you the garbage bag full of popcorn if you go away.
Hey, buddy, I got a movie for you. A fridge too far.
I think it's good.
I love that guy.
Oh yes. Do you have a quote-unquote receipt, quote-unquote, sir? Whoa, a fat, sarcastic Star Trek fan. You must be a real hit with the ladies.
That one and the, yes?
Why do you talk like that?
I just had a stroke.
And he used to annoy the piss out of me until somehow I caught him in just the right mood, and ever since then, like, it just amuses the hell out of me. But for, like, a good year or two, I just get so pissed off, like, just so irritated.
Wow.
And then... I don't know if I was high on legal prescription medication.
Of course.
Of course. Or drunk after the age of 21. But,
right.
He's
a reference, and he was on, that character was on the Flintstones. And I think, obviously, since it was on the Flintstones, it wasn't original, so it's from something else.
I think it's the Flintstones that turned me against that character.
It could be, but they would go to a store or something, and he would go, "May I help you?"
Yeah. Ugh.
But that, I think he was meant to be some famous actor.
Van Dyke show or something.
Could be.
Like,
ooh.
From that era.
I think, too, when I can obviously tell it's Dan Castellaneta doing the voice, like, for some reason, that always kind of
really
throws me. Like, when I can obviously tell that it's him doing it, there's certain voices he does that I just pick out immediately. Like, the Robot Devil on Futurama is another example where I can just pick out and go, that's obviously... I don't mind the Robot Devil for some reason. Like, that one doesn't bother me. But like that guy, I can just tell it's Castellaneta.
See, that didn't bother me. Like, I mean, you look at a guy like Phil Hartman, who was awesome, but he really did not have a range. Like, his Troy McClure and Lionel Hutz sounded exactly the same. But or even somebody like Tress McNeil, who I think is great, but really has one voice.
Yeah. I mean, or, you know, I think even Maurice LaMarche really has.
Oh, sure. Two. Yeah.
You know,
that's a good point.
Like, but for some reason, like Castellaneta, I think because he can do a range of voices, like it's like Billy West a little bit, where
Hear the Billy West voice, then it's kind of like
if I hear the Billy West in it, with the exception of like Fry, because that's obviously just his regular voice,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you hear the Billy West, and it takes me out of it. For some reason, I think I don't know, that might be part of it.
I can see that. There's certain I think Hank Azaria voices where it's like, really?
Yeah.
You're just doing the same one again?
Yeah.
They've in recent seasons they've given him this sort of effeminate Hispanic character.
No.
And it just, like, ugh, really? Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Damn it, tickets area.
Thumbing through my episode guide here, just since we keep trying to wrap this up and we keep saying, no, but The Simpsons are great. the Australia episode would be in my top 10.
Oh, yes.
That one is so fucking great.
I'm going to talk to my prime minister.
Hey, Gus! I love building up to the Australia, even before they leave. Bart calling around the world is another great, like, Bart Hellraiser thing. But then, like, the phone bill comes and Homer thinks he did it. Burkina Faso, disputed zone. Who called all these crazy places? Quiet, it might have been you.
Well, I got to check with Marge. Shut up, you fool. Quiet, and I'll play some soothing music.
No, I think I'll release some endorphins. Was that the endorphins?
That's it. Quiet, and I'll release some endorphins.
There's that one, and there's the whole where Bart's looking at the globe, and he's like, Rand McNally.
Rand McNally cheeseburgers eat you.
So it's Soviet Russia, is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, the lemon tree one. That one was great.
Yes, oh, the lemon tree one. Yes.
God. Drink a cold glass of turnip juice.
And throw the Treeblet Shelbyville. Banish the evil lemon tree because it was haunted. All enjoy a nice cool glass of turnip juice.
Not my mouth, they'll say.
Wait,
Billy makes him look like one of the Beatles.
Your name is Milhouse too. This is what it sounds like when doves cry.
Jake Hanna, boy.
That's it. That's the line.
Oh God, that episode.
Oh yeah, this one's also in my top 10. I think I've named about 30 episodes in my top 10 now. Selma dates Troy McClure one.
Yeah.
And that one's solely for the musical version of Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes. Yeah. I still sing that actually. Like I'll be at work when I'm singing that to myself.
Chimpan A to Chimpan Z.
I was wrong. It was Earth all along.
Yes, we finally made
a monkey. Finally made a monkey.
All right, all right.
Well, I love you, Dr. Zaius.
I was going to say, you cut him off before you get to the good part about loving Dr. Zaius.
That's because it's Matt, and he's not allowed to sing, and he knows that.
And the whole Dr. Zaius song.
Oh, yeah.
Which, whenever I hear Amadeus, I still sing Dr. Zaius.
Yep.
Oh, The Chester Lampwick one. You know, paint my chicken coop.
Oh, yes. I have no idea why that.
Yeah, that has been an enduring quote. Those blinces were terrible. Paint my chicken coop.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all the things that we quote, a lot of it makes sense, but who fucking knows why that one lived on.
It's just a great one to drop in when you're having a stupid argument about something.
Then you realize that you're being a joke and you just, paint my chicken coop.
Those blinces were terrible.
Paint my chicken coop. Make me.
It's always fun to have blintzes. And then just be like, those blintzes were terrible.
Or corn muffins, alternately.
And corn muffins also work.
What was that? Paint my fence?
The only time I have ever interacted with your mom, Al.
Yeah?
I posted those blintzes were terrible on your Facebook.
Oh, right. Time. And then she said something about blintzes being delicious or something.
Blintzes are never terrible. I'm like, wow. Nice to meet you, Mrs. Algar.
Ooh, the one where Bart gets the fake ID and they rent the car. That one's fucking awesome, too. Where him and...
Sunsphere. Yeah. Sunsphere. I never understood. I could never figure out how Martin Prince got in their little group of
friends. Was weird.
Yeah, I don't...
They just kind of integrated him. And then like, Ralph got integrated at some point, too. And it was just kind of like, really? Like,
I mean, the episode was good enough that you didn't care, but it was just, you thinking about it later, like, why would they let Martin in besides the fact that he had $50?
I think that was it.
Mm. But there was like, but there are other episodes too. Like, he had started like with that episode. Like after that, they went, oh, let's throw Martin in them. Cause like he was in the lemon tree episode.
Yeah, he was.
I think
the tale of Nelson, the boy he loves up here.
But I think even he would point that out. Like he would say, hey, you know, I'm not usually in your group. You know, like they would definitely kind of, you know, wink to the audience and say, well, this isn't what we normally do, but I don't know. I don't. It didn't bother me like when they would occasionally make someone out of character. I think I mentioned this before that there was a very recent episode this season where Lisa was just a jerk the whole time.
Yeah.
And calling Bart a loser like the whole episode. And that's it. She never had a change of heart and she never was nice. And every now and then just playing them a little against type or matching up characters that wouldn't normally match up. It just never bothered me.
I just noticed, like, I mean, there was certain, it was like there was that one really horrible, horrible future episode where it was like Bart was living with Ralph.
That was a piece of shit.
I enjoyed moments of that. There's a couple of good gags in there. There's the one where the native guy goes, that's crazy talk. No, really, that's crazy talk, my brother.
I still use what happened to you, China? You used to be cool.
China's still cool.
You pay later.
Smell you later, Bart. Smell you later forever. I mean, there's some good lines in that one.
There's some good lines, but in general, it wasn't a lot of good episodes.
No, it wasn't.
Although the one I did love was Homer's mother.
Yes. Yes,
oh,
that
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
used constantly. Is, damn you, Walt Whitman.
Leaves of grass, my ass. Yeah.
I hate Walt freaking Whitman.
And that was one of their weirdest jokes, I thought, was when Wiggum shows up and he goes, we need a warrant for a Eustwis Arriwo. Like he's reading Homer Simpson upside down. It's really fucking bizarre. He's like, try Greek Town first.
The pool one.
Oh yeah,
yes, the pool one.
Which turned into the Rear Window episode.
Rear Window parody.
God,
yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Anytime they did an homage to like a classic movie like that, that usually turned out great.
First time I saw that too, that episode had some real suspense to it.
Yeah, it did.
Like looking back, I'm like, why the hell would I think Flanders was scary?
Yeah, but watch, really.
Like, Lisa, you gotta get out of there.
Stupid, sexy Flanders.
Like I'm wearing nothing at all.
Or when Smithers takes his vacation and he has a replacement.
Oh, yeah.
We're making breakfast and everything catches on fire.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like,
it is something gay, no doubt.
What? You know, lighthearted, fancy free. That was actually the X-Files episode, that one was. And then they cut to, because that's what everyone's doing on their Friday.
Yeah.
So it's a series of quick little gags, and there's the, you're finished, Donkey Kong. Oh, you still got it. That's another one I quote a lot, and I have no idea why.
Well, it comes up so often.
Of course, Donkey Kong being finished. Almost as often as Blintzes.
Blintzes were terrible.
Paint my chicken coop.
Make me.
Oh, I mean, there's obviously the Radioactive Man movie.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The goggles, they do nothing.
Up and at them.
Too many jillikers.
Up and at them.
Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, I have a problem
spending
with
two decades.
I have a problem with that because I always confuse Mickey Rooney and Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, I do too.
And so I don't know who that is. And everyone says, Mickey Rourke's in Sin City. I'm like, Mickey Rooney's in Sin City? Jiminy Jillikers. Whores. All right, well, we're about hitting the 90-minute mark here, so we should probably wrap up, because we could, I'm sure, sit here and reminisce about The Simpsons for another 12 hours. But
Oh, easily, yeah.
We should probably wrap this up. So any last words, gentlemen?
Thanks for having me on to talk about it, man. It's so rare that I get to talk about this.
Yeah, because nobody wants to hear about it, and really nobody cares. No, really, if I had to say anything, it would be, I think people take the show for granted, and I think we all kind of burnt out on it, but I think it deserves, a fresh look, and if anything, take our enthusiasm and give those old classic episodes a look, or even look in on it now, because it's still a fucking awesome show.
Remember, those blitzes were terrible.
Paint my chicken Always. Coop. All right, guys, take care, and we're going to stop talking now.
Musical interlude.
Right. Hey, what's going on this side?
Tiffany, Taylor, Cody, Dylan, Dermot, Jordan, Taylor, Brittany, Wesley, Rumor, Guy, Cassidy, Rome, Chloe, Max, Hunter, Kendall, Caitlin, Noah, Sasha, Morgan, Kira, Ian, Lauren, Hubert, Bill.
Hey, Maul! Get off the dang roof!
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published every Tuesday and Friday and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website, again, is sarcasticvoyage.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, at RobotMatt and at Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010.
He was a suburban child of the 70s.
Oh, by the way, I was being sarcastic.
Well, duh.